Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept. One we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Deep Space High, sci-fi TV review podcast where we break down the latest and possibly not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So Chris, earlier this week, Disney released a new Star Wars holiday special.
Did they?
Yep, they did. It's a Lego Star Wars holiday special.
Lego Star Wars holiday.
So it's done in the style of Legos.
Oh, interesting. Kind of like Lego Batman and what they were doing with the... Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I checked
it out. Where did they release it? Disney Plus?
Yeah, Disney Plus. It's on Disney Plus. It's came out the 17th. It was like the 40th anniversary of the original, or the 42nd anniversary of the original holiday special. So they released it like Tuesday. I think the same day this episode dropped.
Oh, or
the,
I didn't know that.
Sorry, the last episode dropped.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Did you watch it? Was it any good?
I did watch it. It had its moments. I could care to probably never watch it again, but at least it was like 50, 55 minutes. So I sat down and watched it.
Well, what was it about?
Essentially, you haven't seen the trailer or anything?
No, I didn't even know it existed.
Well, so the gist of it is it's Life Day, which is like their equivalent to like Christmas or something. And Rey is actually training Poe because now they finally say, hey, Poe's force sensitive. Why we couldn't get that in the sequel trilogy? I have no freaking clue, but I feel like...
Supposedly, that's what he was going to say in the last movie when he kept trying to tell Rey something, was that he was force sensitive. I was trying to explain that to you when the seventh came out, that I thought The Force Awakening was about Poe, not Rey. That he was the one who awakened, not Rey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. Yeah, and I didn't think about it when 7 came out, but definitely when 9 came out, after we watched it, I was like, man, they robbed John Boyega. I feel like very good actor, and I feel like they just kind of gypped him with his story.
Oh yeah, and I think he feels the same way.
Yeah, cuz I would have loved
very I think he's been very vocal about calling out Disney and calling out Star Wars for not, using the character properly.
Yeah. What I would have liked to seen in 9 was Rey have flashbacks of probably a bigger time jump. Rey have flashbacks of training. Her training's not complete, but they figured out that Finn was force sensitive and, she even trained him, or Leia helped her, or helped him understand the Force. But he got robbed. It sucks.
Yeah.
But anyways, about the Lego story. So yeah, they finally explain that in probably the crummiest way that his character is force sensitive. She goes to a Jedi temple to try to help her understand how to teach the Force. And then she ends up finding something that ends up sending her back in time. And so she's just time jumping. So it's more of just, it's more suited for the child than the adult. But yeah, you know, she's jumping around time and interacting with three different Obi-Wans and two different Lukes and two different Vaders and all this fun stuff.
Hmm. It seems interesting. Maybe I'll check it out one of these days.
Yeah. For 50 minutes, I mean, it wasn't worth the watch, but there were some times where I chuckled and...
who knows? Maybe if you get high, it's more entertaining when you're high.
Yeah, there you go. Do that.
Everything's better high.
Right. So, but that's what I watched. And it wasn't terrible. Like I said, I'll never watch it again, but if you're stoned and bored one night, I would go and watch it just to say you've watched it.
I think that's pretty much just every night.
that's my philosophy with just about anything Star Wars or Star Trek, or, you know, even if some shows say they're really bad, I'll at least watch it once to get an opinion and be like, okay, I'm never watching this again. It sucked.
Right.
You can do it. You can do it all night long.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Let's go ahead and get into today's episode.
All right. Well, what have we got in store then?
So today we are covering or continuing The Mandalorian, Chapter 12, entitled The Siege. Going to give our spoiler warning here. We are going to talk about the episode in detail, give our speculation. So if you haven't seen it, please stop listening to this podcast only momentarily, though.
Yeah, and go check out the episode. Yeah, long enough to watch the episode and then come back and re-listen to it.
Yep. But I imagine most of you who are here already have seen the episode at least once. So let's go ahead and get into it.
Unless you just really love the sound of our voices, and that's the only reason you come here.
Yeah, chances are, you know, you put it on to kind of fall asleep to our soothing voices.
Our jokes aren't keeping you awake, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, but this episode was, we'll go into we're doing an abridged type summary, a little different style of show than we have been for the previous episodes of Mandalorian, but...
Yeah, if you haven't been able to notice, we're still trying to figure out how exactly to do this show. Or what's the best way to do it, because we're constantly mixing it up from week to week. So we're still figuring things out.
Yeah, and I think we'll it's going to vary depending on if we, you know, do one episode or if we do it like Altered Carbon where we do multiple episodes. So we're going to change stuff on the fly. But at least we'll make you laugh and get your brains thinking about some possible Star Wars theories. So let's go ahead and jump into this first summary. Episode opens with Mando and the child doing some kind of hilarious repairs on the Razor Crest as it's limping along through space. Mando's trying to explain to the child that he needs to connect the red cord or red cable to where the blue cable used to be and the blue cable where the red cable used to be. Mm-hmm. That doesn't go very well, and Baby Yoda ends up shocking himself with the two wires. That was pretty funny.
That was adorable. It was a very almost Guardians of the Galaxy 2 Groot kind of thing. You know, where Groot's got to plant the bomb.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of that then, but yeah, that's a perfect analogy. It is a good comparison. But in the next scene we see Mando and Baby Yoda eating. Mando's able to kind of, it's like he has a hinge on his mask and is able to kind of lift it up without taking off his helmet.
Yeah,
similar to like Iron Man's kind of, his faceplate will come back up. Similar, but different.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, there's got to be some way that these guys eat or drink. I mean, there's no holes in their masks. There's no, I mean, they can't be expected to keep it on all the time. They got to eat or drink something at some point.
The way I always thought about it, like if someone asked him for a beer, I just thought he would take a bendy straw and...
Yeah, right.
Just put it in between his mouth and a mask times. And just like, you know, slurp up whatever he's having. I don't know how he would eat, but at least drink-wise, that's a possibility.
Could eat everything via smoothie form.
True. But in this scene, you know, Mando's like, we're not going to make it to where we need to go to find Ahsoka Tano. How do you feel about, as he's talking to the child, he's like, how do you feel about making a stop at Nevarro? Seeing some old pals and getting some repairs. So that's pretty much where the first or our first summary is going to end.
I'm still trying to figure out like the timeline for this. Like, how long has it been since the last time I got to Navarro? Because, you know, Apollo Creed's beard, like, it's completely white. She manages to does she become a marshal? Is that what they called her?
It's like kind of like the guy in the first episode of season two. Kind of came in and cleaned up the town a little bit and got things in order, and that's kind of what she's doing, because we saw a scene where she
being less angry Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes. Cara Dune is kind of someone's like looting or scavenging in the old Mandalorian hideout, and she comes in and kind of cleans them up and kills kind of all is like four or five of the weird alien species that I'm sure I've seen in the original trilogy or somewhere.
Oh yeah, we have. I don't know what the name of it is, but it looked like she was trying not to kill them specifically, because she really didn't use her blaster until she absolutely needed to, which kind of makes me think that, and I think that they did, you have to read what they were saying because, you know, they're aliens, but I think they did call her the Marshal. So yeah, I think she kind of did become the law figure in the town, and she was trying to avoid killing them, but
yeah,
she still ended up killing him, so she just made things difficult on herself.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something I was thinking about going back to this helmet for an instant. I was thinking about the episode where we're first introduced to less angry Rosie O'Donnell. When, you know, Mando, this is the episode, The Sanctuary, when Mando is kind of hiding out on the Krill farm. And this lady brings him some food, and he takes off his helmet, sets it down next to his food, and eat. How come he just wouldn't, like, pop his mask open? Because I remember talking about, you know, what if someone just barges in on him? Now he's shit out of luck because someone sees him without his helmet on and sees his face.
Well, maybe it's only with, like, liquids or, like, broths. Because if you notice, he has a tendency whenever he goes to, like, a bar or a shop and he orders something, it's always, like, a stew or a soup. Like, he was drinking a soup with Baby Yoda after the electricity scene when he opened up his helmet. So maybe he just gets his nutrients from, you know, liquid nutrients, like, you know, soups and broths mostly, and unless he can be alone to take off his helmet. Because that one time when he took his helmet off, he had actual, like, you know, food.
Yeah, but I think maybe the mask can pop open a little more and it can give him some ability. I mean, come on, if they can't take off their helmet, the armor is going to construct a way for it to open without, you know, where he can have his mask open to eat.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be. Otherwise, like you said, you're running into a situation where he takes off his helmet to eat, someone barges in on him, and he's shit out of luck.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just a thought that came to mind when I was watching the episode.
I don't know. I mean, I thought about it too, but I guess they're, I don't know.
Okay. You don't know.
I don't know.
Oh,
that's about it. I mean, okay. I could try and bullshit something, but really don't got anything to bullshit. I guess we'll just kind of keep watching and let's see if, you know, they do anything else to address the issue. Cause this is the second time they addressed the issue. So maybe they'll address it again in the future.
Yeah, probably. Another thing was, with Baby Yoda, I mean, we see he knows his colors and kind of can understand Mando when they're having that whole interaction.
Oh my God.
What? Interaction with.
40 and slip there, brother?
Not really. No.
Okay.
But when they're having the interaction with the red and blue wires, and, you know, you can see kind of how intelligent Baby Yoda is. He's smart enough to know the different colors and kind of he needs to put something somewhere and something somewhere, and then he gets all, well, confused. We'll say Chris-like. Oh, and God. connects the two wires and shocks himself. But, you know, it's kind of just another, I mean, yes, it was a funny scene and it came off as very comedic, but it's another scene that also shows us just how intelligent and how unintelligent he is at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when the Razor Crest lands back on the planet and they meet up with Apollo Creed and Les Angry Rosie. Okay, well, we're getting there. Sorry. We know that they were heading back to the planet because they talked about it. But when they land, you know, Apollo Creed picks up Baby Yoda. He welcomes Mando and asks him if he treated him okay. And he kind of mumbled, yeah, almost like he was talking. He's like, oh, did you hear that? He said, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe he's kind of starting to get to the point where he's figuring all this stuff out, being able to speak, or starting to be able to speak. Because he, I've noticed when listening to Baby Yoda, he keeps saying pato, pato, pato.
So you think he picked up Spanish?
Well, actually, pato's Tagalog. It means dumbass in Tagalog. I don't think he's actually saying it, but it's a word.
Or he's trying to say vato.
Could be. Bato, vato, vato. I mean,
what's next? Pendejo?
Keep in mind, I mean, yeah, right. Hijo
well, de puta. The
Spanish did control the Philippines, so, I mean, they got a lot of the similar words, that's why. But you never know. I mean, maybe he is starting to pick up a few words and starting to pick things up.
Could be. But let's jump into the next segment of the show, or, well, of the episode. Because, like you said, Mando and Baby Yoda arrive to Navarro. They're greeted by Cara Dune, Less Angry Rosie O'Donnell, and Greef Karga, who is Magistrate Karga, which is interesting. We can get into that in a little bit.
Magistrate
welcomes them to the planet. The ship's like, man, it limped along from Trash to Navarro because it was just in rough shape. The cargo hatch only came down like halfway, and he had to jump down, and it's just like, dang. I don't even know what that Mon Calamari did. I guess he did something. I mean, because they at least were able to travel through space, but it raised the question, did they have to stay with... No. I was going to say, did they have to stay within the cockpit, or were they able to pressurize and seal the entire hull?
I think they got it pressurized and sealed, because when they were in that first scene with Baby Yoda, when they're trying to figure out the wires, they weren't in the cargo hold, or they weren't in the cockpit, they were in the main area.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But when I saw them landing, everything was kind of vibrating, like nothing was pressurized or sealed so that it could withstand the vacuum of space.
I don't know. I don't think they were in the cockpit. I think they did manage. I just think that it was roughly
rough re-entry screwed them up.
Could have been.
Okay.
Could have been.
So anyways, back to this next summary. As we said, they land on the planet greeted by Karga and Cara Dune, which we saw in the first season. You know.
They brought back the blue guy from the first episode.
They did. I was going to go to that. But also, I was going to say, you know, they stroll through town and they end up going to that cantina where they were pinned down at the end of season one. And kind of had that big fireball explosion. And I don't know if you noticed that was the same place, but they made several references to it in the episode, which is now converted into a school.
Yeah, I saw that. That was funny. I love that scene.
Did you watch that scene with the subtitles on?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because the first time I didn't, the second time I did. But, you know, there's times where you can't really hear the protocol droid teacher. Mm-hmm. But if you have the subtitles on, you could see what she's saying. And they're talking about trade routes. She mentions, hey, Coruscant used to be the capital of the Old Republic and during the Imperial times. But now, for the New Republic, the capital is Chandrilla.
I didn't hear that. I mean, I heard about the trade routes, because when they walked into the school, that's what they were talking about. And she was asking if anybody knew any trade routes. And I thought I heard Kessel Run. I didn't know for sure.
They did mention Kessel. They were mentioning like the moons that orbit Kessel and kind of like how things orbit the sun in that system. Mm-hmm. So I recommend, if you haven't, go back and watch it, because there's a lot of details that teacher or that protocol droid is teaching to those kids that you don't get if you don't have the subtitles on.
Interesting. I wonder why they moved it from Coruscant. I mean, because the Empire, because in 6, the Emperor eliminated the Galactic Senate. There was no more Galactic Senate, which would make sense why the capital was no longer on Coruscant. So, I mean, could that be why they moved it from Coruscant to this new planet? What was the name of the new planet that they moved it to? It was Chandrilla.
I know it's
now, was Chandrilla the one that was destroyed in 7?
I think so.
Force Awakens?
I think so. It's one of the, I think it's a handful, but, you know, to kind of go off of it, I would, like I said, highly recommend watching that scene. Maybe not the first time, but maybe the second or third time in subtitles, because there's a lot of stuff where they're just talking about systems and they give in, it's just more details that you don't pick up if you don't watch it with the subtitles.
Right.
Okay, we got a little tangent. Back to the summary.
That's a good tangent, though. I mean, it's it is.
Which I was going to bring up in our talking points for this section, but it's all good. So they ended up leaving the child there in the school while Grief and Carl Dune have an ulterior motive to get Mando away from the child, because finds out that when they go back to Grief's office, hey, there's still an Imperial base on the planet. There's not much there, and there's some old weapons and some pretty brutal weapons that they want to have destroyed. That way the black market doesn't get their hands on them, and if they run the Empire out, it could finally be Karga's planet and he doesn't have to worry about them, and you know, they can make themselves a legitimate establishment.
Right.
So that's what, and as you mentioned, that's when we see the blue guy. I don't know his name, but his species
I don't think
they
ever mentioned it.
Well, they keep referring him to a mithril, which is his species, the amphibian fish-like species, because he has to have something around his gills to keep him hydrated.
Hmm.
But I still haven't really heard a name from him. If there is a name, I don't know. They just referred to him as, hey, Mithril.
Yeah, I don't recall ever hearing a name either. I was hoping that you would notice, because you tend to pick that up. But
I did. They might have in the first scene of the first episode, because that's where it was from, but I didn't hear anything. But comes to find out, you know, Grief Karga got him out of Carbonite, and it was like gave him essentially, it was like 300 or 350 years of community service to work off his debt.
I mean, so maybe that's not a big deal since I guess the species lives that long.
Could be, but then again, you know, there's, you know, people who can meet or who commit horrendous crimes on Earth, they get sentenced like, you know, 4 or 5 lifetimes.
Yeah, that's true. But so, I mean,
they could have a couple lifetimes knocked off, but what's that going to do? Still life in prison. So
well,
it just depends
on
his species lifespan.
I don't know if he was necessarily being punished for crimes. I think he was doing it because he didn't pay back his debt. So he was trying to work off his debt.
The way he said it, Grief Karga described it as creative accounting, which tells me he was embezzling or stealing.
Right.
So now he's having to work back all that funds, or work back for the funds that he stole.
And if it takes 350 years, I'd imagine that's a lot of money.
Yeah, because there was, I mean, in the first episode, if you remember, he keeps trying to bribe Mando. He's like, I got a lot of money. What do you want? And then you can just let me go and I'll be on my merry way.
Right. Yeah. No, that doesn't make sense then. So maybe he was a criminal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, we definitely know who he was, but.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Baby Yoda. You know, first of all, we'll talk about Baby Yoda in the school scene. But it's cool to see that they have macaroons in the Star Wars universe. I know technically they're not going to call them macaroons, Chris. You probably don't even know what a freaking macaroon is.
I know what a macaroon is.
What is it?
It's a kind of cookie. It's an Asian cookie.
Is it Asian? I always thought it was like French.
No, I think it's Asian. Because I know it because, well, I live in Nevada, and the school that I went to had a huge Asian population. Like more than half the school was Filipino, and all my friends were Filipino, and they were all obsessed with it. I mean, you go to an Asian market and you could buy them. I mean, you buy hundreds of them. That's all they would eat. So that's kind of how I know what they are. So I think they're Asian, but
they're,
I don't
know
for certain. Are they? Okay.
Mm-hmm. According to Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, there's blue macaroons in the Star Wars universe. And I was like, that does look tasty.
I don't know. I've never really liked them. They're weird taste, and I always feel like throwing up whenever I eat them.
I can only
eat
like
one or two,
because they're usually a lot of sugar.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's sweet. It's kind of cookie, so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've never really been too into them. So, but apparently, Baby Yoda loves them and enough to steal them from another kid. Steal them. I know. Just the look on Baby Yoda's face. He just looked over at the kid and he just waved his hand up. He's like, "Can I have one, please?"
I think that's the most he's used the Force in this season. Because the only other time I remember him using it is kind of pulling the eggs towards him in the second episode. And we don't actually see it.
Did he use the Force for that? Like, I didn't know he even used the Force to do that.
The first time he interacted with the eggs, he put his hand on the glass and kind of pulled all the eggs towards his hand while they were still within the tank.
Oh. Now, I didn't notice. I thought they were just kind of... I was going to say swimming to him, but that wouldn't make any sense.
That makes no sense.
And unfertilized.
So the only thing, that's the only time I remember him using the Force. Yeah. And then here to use the macaroons, which we don't even see on screen. It kind of happens off screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's all towards food. I mean, he's just kind of been, Baby Yoda's just been all food this
season. That little thing can eat.
Then again, we don't know what the lapse of time is. So maybe they just don't have enough food and he's just a starving little baby because they can't get him fed.
Well, I mean, he's eating frogs that it would, for someone or something his size, seems like it would be a lot of food.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you're saying, we don't know the time gap. So there's got to be some, or even how fast his metabolism is. Maybe he burns and digests that quickly.
Yeah, it could be.
Which brings me to the next point. How does Baby Yoda use the toilet and how is Mando changing him?
I have no idea. I don't think he's potty trained, so... And we haven't really seen a diaper, so... Could just be going wherever.
Willy-nilly dog, like a dog, just, you know, lifts his leg whenever he has to pee.
Yeah, I guess
sniffs around when he has to take a dump. Maybe. Interesting. That wasn't in my notes originally, but, you know, the thought came up, so I had to ask the question. just had to. Ooh. All right. All right, let's talk about the back half of this episode, because this is where shit gets juicy. It kind of felt like a, I won't say a filler, but a necessary, you know, episode up to this point. Necessary filler up to this point. And so the last half of the episode, Mando and the gang, which includes less angry Rosie O'Donnell, Grief Karga, a.k.a. Apollo Creed, and the Blue Man Group, or at least one third of the Blue Man Group, they head out to this base so they can destroy it, with the plan being, okay, this base is kind of over a lava pit, essentially. They have a cooling system. Let's knock out the kind of shields and cooling system, similar to the Mustafar situation that we saw in episode in Revenge of the Sith.
Three. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to call it three, but I wanted to distinguish Revenge of the Sith from the third episode of Mandalorian. So that's their plan. And then it comes to find out it's not really as abandoned as Karga had initially thought.
I love how arrogant the stormtroopers were. Like, I'm kind of skipping a little bit ahead, but eventually the stormtroopers. I know, but they figured out that they were inside the base, and they typical stormtrooper fashion, they underestimated their opponents, and they're like, "We got them!" And they all died immediately after he says them. Yeah. And it's just, it's funny because the stormtroopers to normal people are probably terrifying, you know, very accurate, you know, scary looking figures to common everyday people. But you look at anybody who is a halfway competent shot and it's like, how the hell do the stormtroopers scare anybody? I mean, four guys walked into that base and just killed every single stormtrooper like it was nothing.
Well, yeah. But, you know, Mandalorian took care of some of them when he first jet packed up there. I like, you know, because in this, they use the Mandrill or the Mithril. I had his name down before we recorded, or his species, the Mithril. So they kind of use him as the guinea pig or the scapegoat. They're just like, we'll hack into this. Well, go ahead and shut down the systems. Well, go ahead and figure out what the hell's going on. They just use him, you know, he was comedic relief, obviously. But it's like, well, everyone else was gung-ho, and they're just like,
Well, Apollo did say, do it, and I'll knock 100 years off of your debt, so...
Well, yeah, there was some incentive, but I was like, okay, we're talking to a very experienced Mandalorian bounty hunter, a very experienced combat veteran from the Galactic Civil War, and I'm assuming Greef Karga was a pretty experienced bounty hunter before he took over the guild and now is magistrate to the Navarro. So I'm pretty sure some of them have splicing skills, and you know, it's just funny. It's like four veterans, and then you get a fifth veteran, or you get a fifth guy that's kind of like a new recruit, and so everyone's hazing and making him do all the shit that no one else wants to do.
Could be
because he's the new guy.
I don't know. He was funny. He kind of reminds me of. Because I don't know if you watched how he reacted during all the fight scenes, but he kind of reminds me of me in Call of Duty. Constantly, like, hiding behind the cargo.
Just hiding.
And popping up and down. No, popping up and down before finally deciding to take a shot.
And hitting nothing. And then
dying. Yeah, right. But almost like teabagging behind a container, take cover. I mean, that's what he was doing the entire time. And he was just... He was almost throwing his blaster while he was shooting. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I did notice that.
It's one of the things, like, you and I are both experienced shooters, but for people who don't know what they're doing for shooting, they have a tendency to, like, throw the gun forward as they're shooting, and I don't know why they do it. And it bugs me to hell, especially when actors do it. And that's exactly what he was doing. He was just kind of, like, throwing his blaster at when he was trying to shoot. And it was the dumbest thing I ever saw. But it was funny as hell.
Yeah, but after he shuts down the shields and the cooling system to kind of send the base into self-destruct mode, the crew is trying to find their way out, and they end up stumbling upon this lab, this very important lab, which is going to be pretty much the focal point of the rest of our episode.
So, yeah, I mean...
So it's fascinating, because it's one of those, you know... The guys kind of in the lab, I don't know if I would call them scientists or techs or whatever, but now they know there's intruders, so they're sitting there trying to scrub the system, and then, oops, our crew walks in.
He literally just starts shooting the damn
thing.
Well,
no, that's where I'm saying, if you had the subtitles on, before they enter the room, they're kind of aware that there's intruders, so they're trying to kind of wipe whatever data they can, and then
clear
as soon
their
as...
Clear browser history?
Yeah, pretty much. But as soon as Mando and his gang walks in, you know, they go from clearing the browser history to just shoot the fucking computer. It's like,
yeah,
destroy the hard drive.
Didn't really do a good job, I guess.
No.
You literally are standing right in front of the computer and you still miss what you needed to hit.
Well, he hit it, but it's like...
Not
was
well
he
enough.
The right parts? It's like,
I guess
it's like
not,
if you were to shoot
the
monitor... It's like if you shoot the monitor, but you don't get the hard drive.
Yeah.
Well, then you just go plug another monitor in, or you could still access all the data, which is probably what happened.
I mean, it is what happened. They managed to access the hologram.
Yeah. So, you know, they access this hologram, and it's a hologram of Dr. Pershing's.
Which was the doctor who was experimenting on Baby Yoda in season one.
Yes, I was going to get there. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So he has a message where, and it's pretty much verbatim, pretty close. So trials have been, they were seeming positive. They were going well for 2 weeks. And then the subject was rejecting the blood transfusion and it didn't go very well. We're out of blood that we took from Baby Yoda. We need access to the donor to get more blood. And that he's not 100% confident they should move forward with the testing and experimenting because he doesn't want to harm the volunteer.
Right.
And if you look around the room, you know, there's a couple of Banta tanks, which is like their healing tubs.
Yeah, I was getting, there was someone or something in one of them, and I couldn't tell what it was.
So watch it again. If you watch it on your computer, turn your brightness all the way up, and it looks Snoke-like. And especially if you look at the head and take a look at it, it's kind of wrinkled and it looks like there's a scar, like they're trying to clone Snoke.
Well, I mean,
or they're
experimenting with Snoke.
It wouldn't
surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me since we know from the movies that Snoke was a clone. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I mean, it seems a little bit
far-fetched.
Because, okay, if it
is... why reopen that
No, not exactly. It wouldn't make sense, because I think we're getting into the First Order, because if, you know, again, skipping ahead, later in the scene, they're on what looks like a form of Imperial cruiser, and you have an Imperial officer talking to one of her agents saying, you'll be rewarded in the new order.
New era.
Okay, so this... I thought she said order.
No, it was era.
I don't know. I think we need to double check, because I've watched it twice, and I could have been sure I heard order
both
times. That's why I immediately thought of First Order.
Let's talk about that last scene, because she goes and what ends up happening is, after they discover the lab, they get into a chase, and the chase leads, you know, it's a great action sequence for a good 5 minutes or so, where speeder bikes are chasing them, and then TIE fighters are chasing them, and then Mando comes to the rescue, and then they fly off. So in this scene, we find out one of the people on Navarro, who was the mechanics who fixed Mando's ship, put a tracking beacon on it. That person's an agent for the Empire, potentially becoming the First Order. And then the lady officer goes and gets Karga, and she's like, it's done. The tracking device is on the ship. And then he's like, good. And then it pans out where you kind of see...
almost looks like shock troopers.
Yeah, shock troopers. I was thinking of death troopers, kind of the stormtroopers who are in black armor. And yeah,
well, I thought those were shock troopers.
I don't know, because I thought they were shock troopers, and then I watched a YouTube video, and someone was referring to legends. And a legend story where it's a death trooper who's kind of what the legend story is. They're injected with blood with midichlorians and given force sensitivity. So it's pretty much a battalion or a regiment of stormtroopers who are force sensitive and can wield lightsabers and shoot blasters, and is the best of the best of the best when it comes to stormtroopers.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's what they're trying to do. I mean, we know that the doctor was, I don't remember exactly what he said. M count.
Yeah. He said M count, which we assume is Mandalorian or midichlorian count.
Right.
As we saw in the prequels.
Right. I mean, a lot of people didn't like the idea of midichlorians, but I think it's actually kind of necessary when it comes to understanding the Force. You know,
well, it's necessary to help understand what distinguishes someone who has Force abilities versus someone who doesn't have Force abilities in the Star Wars universe. So maybe everyone has a midichlorian count, but maybe, say, Force-sensitive people have to have a midichlorian count of 10,000 or more or something like that.
Yeah, I think they do, because I watched some videos on different theories about the midichlorian counts, because midichlorians are a real thing. They're basically part of our cells. They're part of our cell structures. I don't remember exactly what they're
called. You're talking about the mitochondria?
Yeah.
That's the powerhouse. That's what they're cell.
Well, that's what they're essentially not the mitochondria, but they're parts of, I think they're supposed to be like part of our cellular system or part of our, what makes up our cells. I can't remember. I haven't taken biology since ninth grade.
Yeah, go back to biology. I think you're hitting the grass a little hard there.
Well, it's supposed to be, they're supposed to be, God damn it. I can't, they're little parts of the cell that makes up, the cell structure. There's different microorganisms what's inside the cell that makes up the different structures of the cell. I don't remember what it was called, but that's essentially what they're supposed to be.
Go do your research.
I did the research. It was 10 years ago. I haven't done this shit in 10 years. So
next time, write it down. All right. But anyways,
I was trying to get to is there is a quantification. And I think that from what I heard, you need at least 8,000 midichlorians before you begin to start getting force sensitive. And then different levels of the midichlorian counts determines how far you can progress with the Force. Master Yoda and Anakin were supposed to have the two highest midichlorian counts. They were supposed to be in like the Grand Master form of counts, which is about 16,000 to 18,000 midichlorians. Anakin was originally, I think he was expected to have like in the 20,000s. Like
I think they said over 20,000 when Obi-Wan did his labs, yeah, or whatever.
Because it was supposed to be the most like they've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, even higher than Yoda's.
Yeah. And then part of when Anakin got his limbs cut off and he lost those cells, he lost a lot of his ability to his Force ability because they were part of his cell structures, the midichlorian. So he lost a bit of his connection with the Force.
I'm not quite sure that's how that works.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a part of your cell structure, so if you lose body parts,
I don't like it.
Well, okay, so you know how. So
here's what we're doing.
We're
speculating, and we need the show to give us an answer of how this works. And I think it's good you brought that up because I think the show is actually going to explore, because George Lucas was originally going to have the sequel or the. Yeah, 7, 8, 9 be about midichlorians and a deeper dive and understanding that and the connection with the Force. And I think because we didn't see that, I think what Dave Filoni is going to do is kind of backdoor that story either in The Mandalorian or maybe other shows. So right now we're just kind of speculating, but I think at some point we're going to see something that explains that with the midichlorians.
Yeah, and I think I agree because.
But
you
I don't
know,
think
if
it's
you're
quite
going
the,
into like. Well, I think the idea is,
like,
I think what they're going to try and do is...
Because you lose those cells, you're not as strong with the Force.
Well, I think it does because when, for example, let's go into the video games. Let's go with the Old Republics. Because you know how in the Old Republics they have the Force bar to where you can only use so much Force at a time. You deplete your Force ability.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've even seen it here in the show where Baby Yoda could only do so much and then he has to sleep for a fortnight.
Right, because they're harnessing the energy from the midichlorians inside of their cells. They deplete because that's like the channel or almost like the current that the Force flows through is through the midichlorians. And when you exhaust that energy, you know, you're depleting your cells. So if you lose those limbs, those midichlorians that were in those cells, for example, when Anakin lost most of his arms, he lost part of his ability to he wasn't as strong with the Force because he couldn't access the midichlorians that were in those cells anymore. And that's kind of the point where I was getting with the limbs cut off. But they're in the cellular structure of your body, and that's why the doctor was taking the blood of Baby Yoda to try and harness the midichlorians, because obviously Baby Yoda's got a shit ton of midichlorians. I mean, we know Yoda did.
Yeah, and I think the deal is his species is very
Force-sensitive.
And, you know, most of them...
Well, here's the speculation. Here's the interesting thing. What if Baby Yoda is a clone of Yoda they're trying to regrow to get the midichlorians?
He's not.
Well, how do we know?
They explained it somewhere.
When?
I think sometime in season 1.
I don't remember that.
Well, it's because you were high most of the time.
Well, I mean,
I don't
still,
think he's a clone.
Make
not,
sense
I don't think he's
a
not a clone because he's his own species.
I mean, it
could
be.
Or his own being.
Well, I mean, clones, you have to they're not like carbon copies. You have to grow them just like you would a normal baby. So it would make sense if they try to grow them to try and harness the midichlorians and use it to create these warriors.
They've explained it somewhere. He's not a clone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. No, it was the pig guy. What was his name?
Oh, yeah. It was the Ugnaught. It was Quill. He was like, no, this doesn't look like anything that's been in a cloning facility. There you go. Season 1.
Well, I think they were referring to if he was genetically created, like if he were created in some sort of facility rather just taking the DNA of baby or of Yoda just somewhere and then using that DNA to regrow him and just restart the lifestyle. I don't know if it was referring to like genetically structured or genetically engineered. I think that's what they were referring to.
Yeah, no, I think when they referred to that, I think they were saying, no, it doesn't look like a clone. It doesn't look like genetic engineering. It doesn't look like anything like that. So we're taking that off the table.
So I
think,
don't know. Let's talk about
let's get off the Midichlorian counts and the clones, because there's still a couple things that we'll have to touch on. So one, it looked like Snoke was in those Bantha tanks. I urge you to go watch it again.
And I mean, I knew somebody was in there, and I was thinking Snoke, but it just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense right now because we don't have all the answers, but it's a possibility.
The reason it didn't make sense is because when in 9, when we found out that Snoke was a clone, you could see the cloning facilities at the planet where the Emperor was hiding. I don't remember the name of the planet.
Well, yes, but maybe this is where it all started.
You know, I would imagine. I thought it all started on that planet.
Because there's a volunteer, someone who is getting experimented on, or who is supposed to be the first test subject to try to successfully transfuse Midichlorian blood to make a non-Jedi person or being into a Jedi, or, you know, Force sensitive. So one question I have is, who's this volunteer, which I hope we get an answer for before the season ends. Then Dr. Pershing refers to a donor. So they're getting blood from somewhere, from someone who has a lower Midichlorian count than whatever Yoda's in the child species is. Mm-hmm. So who's that donor? And, you know, because at first there's a couple theories and videos I watched where, oh, they're trying to make Moff Gideon Force sensitive. I was like, okay, but listening to the dialogue and reading it in subtitles, if Pershing's is sending a message to Moff Gideon, why would he refer to a volunteer as if it's not him? So if you're like my test subject and you're my volunteer, I would phrase it differently, where it's like, I'm not comfortable, you know, doing this experiment on you or something like that.
Right.
So it makes it seem like the volunteer is a different person.
I don't think it's Moff Gideon, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if Moff Gideon is trying to be, trying to gain Force ability for his own use, but he's using the volunteers to figure out how to do it first.
Yeah. So,
you know what I mean? His objective is to become Force sensitive, and he's using the volunteers to make sure it doesn't kill him first.
Well, my big question is, the one that's striking me, not so much the volunteer, even though I'm curious, but who the donor is. Is it someone captured during Order 66, a Jedi, or a Jedi on the run who ended up being captured, and now they're just kind of holding him hostage and using him as a lab rat, or them as a lab rat? Is it Snoke? Because, you mean, Snoke should be alive during this time. And it could have been the start of the cloning process and trying to clone a Force-sensitive being, because if you remember, or if you played Force Unleashed 2, the video game, before Disney bought Lucasfilm, it's very difficult to clone a Force-sensitive being and them retain their powers that they had from their original specimen.
Right, because Midichlorians, I imagine, would be hard to recreate.
Yeah, so like, you know, you can clone Jango Fett, no problem. The cloning Obi-Wan or Yoda, that's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
And expecting the clone to have the same level of Force, if any Force abilities whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean,
I think, and I'm not the only one, I think other YouTubers think that what they're trying to do is there's a special volunteer and they're trying to perfect the process so they can make these death troopers of kind of, they're like Inquisitors, which was the group who, like, the second sister, and it's a group of former Jedi who turned evil, who hunted down the remaining Jedi after the Clone Wars and kind of before the Galactic Civil War, and probably even during the Galactic Civil War of the original trilogy. Oh, no, wait.
No, yeah. I don't think the Inquisitors were involved until then, because I remember reading the Darth Vader comics, and I remember the Emperor introducing Vader to the Inquisitors, and he didn't even know what the Inquisitors was. So if he was involved in the war and dealing against the Separatists, and if the Inquisitors were involved in that, he would have known already who they were.
No, like
or okay, what the Inquisitors so, were. So I don't think that
I say the Galactic Civil War, which I think is actually the other name for the Clone Wars. But I'm talking about the Inquisitors were post Order 66.
Right.
Jedi who have fallen to the dark side. They were trained by one of their former, you know, Jedi masters who turned evil. And then their mission was to hunt down the Jedi in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope to kill and destroy any Jedi.
Right.
So that's what they could be doing, but what they're trying to do is, instead of, because the Force-sensitive beings are nearly extinct because of Order 66, they're trying to take whatever beings are left and create and transfuse their blood to make their own Death Squad or Death Troopers that we mentioned earlier.
This is also from the Vader comics, but you bring it up because the Force-sensitive beings are nearly extinct. And this is where I bring it up, is because that actually came up in the comics, to where Emperor Palpatine tried to... I don't remember her name. She was in charge of the library at the Jedi Temple. She was a Jedi Jocasta Master. Jocasta Nu. That was it. She was trying to put together a new school, a new Jedi Academy. And she had a list of every Force-sensitive child known in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And Emperor Palpatine actually tried to get... He sent Vader to get it from her, and he actually wanted her to... This was the one Jedi he didn't want to be killed. He sent Vader to kill every other Jedi. She was the only one because he wanted that list of Force-sensitive people to use as potential training for new Sith or Inquisitors, or, you know, in case they needed a new apprentice eventually. But Vader actually destroyed that list, so he could never get his hands on it. So there's still a bunch of Force-sensitive children throughout the universe. So my guess is they probably could have just used any. And we know that that's the case because in episode 8, at the very end, when they you see the little slave kid use the Force to grab the broom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still Force-sensitive people out there. So they could just use anybody.
They could.
But I just thought that was interesting because they did bring that up in the comics.
I think with Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, they're going to tie it to someone either in the Clone Wars, the prequel trilogy, or maybe even the sequel or the OG trilogy.
Oh, they could. And so. It's probably going to be interesting. Who knows? Maybe it's Ahsoka.
We'll see.
I doubt it, but.
Probably not. But I think Ahsoka is a good tangent to what we have next week. So why don't we could wrap this conversation on this episode. What was your thoughts? What did you think of this episode?
It was a good episode. It doesn't feel new. Like, I get it. We're getting a lot of, we're getting a lot more information with each episode that passes, but it feels kind of the same every week. Just kind of similar style, just different story, you know, as we're going week to week. Baby Yoda's awesome, adorable, funny, hungers for food, teases you a little bit with the Force, Mando does something awesome, badass, and, you know, we continue on to the next week. I mean, it was a good episode. I thought it was funny as hell, good storyline. I liked how we learned a lot. I'm interested to see the next week's episode. But it just kind of feels very Nickelback-ish, you know, same stuff all the time, just kind of going off of it, if that makes any sense.
It does.
You know, I hate to compare Mandalorian to Nickelback, but I'd like a curveball, something a little bit different, mix it up a bit.
Well, that's why
you know what I mean?
I'm sure we'll get it coming up in the coming episodes because there's still four left.
Especially returning to the same planet for the third time.
Well, now I think from here on out, it's probably going to be different stuff. Okay. We saw Tatooine. We saw Nevarro again. And I think this was a good episode. It started off feeling like maybe a potential filler episode, but you know, it really wasn't because of the information we got in the last 10 minutes, because we found out, okay, there was some sort of lab or facility for experimenting on beings and trying to transfer Force abilities to a non-Force user. And I think this was a very good episode, directed by Carl Weathers himself, Apollo Creed. Greef Karga, whatever you want to call him. I think he did an excellent job. I don't know if it's the first time he's ever directed, but I think it's the first time I've ever seen him direct anything.
Yeah, I mean, he did a good job for his first one.
At least his first Star Wars one. We'll go with that, because I'm not sure on his directorial history before this.
I don't know.
I think it was a good episode, and I think I was kind of on the edge of my seat most of the time, and especially when we got into the Hala message and the last scene with Moff Gideon.
Well, I think there's another important
strange scene strange that we kind things of... are upon us.
Yeah, there was a strange things are upon us. Who said that?
Well, I was going to say strange things are afoot of the Circle K or whatever, and quote Bill and Ted, but you started talking and kind of got in the way.
Well, the point that I was going to go with was another interesting scene that we didn't touch on at the end was the rebel pilots actually talked with Apollo Creed at the end, gets a statement on what's going on. I guess they're almost like law enforcement. It seems like these pilots.
Well, they're patrolling the outer rim they're patrolling the outer rim. So it's like a highway patrol, you know,
essentially. But one of the point that I was getting to was in that conversation, he talks with Cara Dune, who was a former shock trooper from Alderaan. And he brings up Alderaan. But I think the most important part was they're starting to realize that something's going on in the outer rim. And that the members of the core worlds don't believe that anything's actually happening, but something is actually happening. So I bring this up because
it's the start of the First Order.
Right. And that's the direction that I'm really excited for. And that's actually the scene that got me really excited, because I'm fascinated to see, one, if I'm right and this is the direction that they go with, going with the First Order. Because that's kind of what I wanted to see in the first season, was how they do this. So I'm getting really excited for that. But what was the other part that I'm excited about?
I don't know. That's why I tell you to update the notes. You can't remember for shit.
Yeah, I know. But there was another part of it that I was excited about. I'm looking forward to seeing the rise of the First Order. And I'm curious what Moff Gideon... Oh, that's what I'm curious about. I'm curious how Moff Gideon ties into it. I'm curious his role. Because why wouldn't he have a title if he was a part of the Empire? Why do they just call him Moff Gideon? What is his role? It's his rank. Moff is his
rank. It's his rank.
Moff is an actual rank in the Empire.
Moff. Yes. Oh my gosh.
What the fuck? That's the weirdest title I've ever heard. Moff Gideon.
It's like being a field marshal in the German army, or it's equivalent to an admiral or a general, or I mean maybe a little inferior, maybe a little superior. I don't know the exact rank system off the top of my head, but he's a Moff in the Imperial. Imperial forces.
I'm a student of military history and just history in general, but I've never heard any title similar to that. No, I mean you got a field marshal, like I get it, but I just never heard Moff before.
It's a Star Wars it's a title. It's a or
even
a title
in the Star
or
Wars
rank,
universe,
maybe.
I've never heard Moff before. So this is even a first for the Star Wars universe for me. So, I mean, who's another prominent Moff? Because like I figured,
Grand Moff Tarkin, or is it Tarkin? I know he was a governor. Governor Tarkin.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Like, why wouldn't he have that title then?
He did at some point. He was like the head Moff.
I don't know.
I think he was governor. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember ever hearing him called Moff.
Because he was in one movie.
Well, okay. Then it's. I'm curious about Moff Gideon's role then. And that was the point that I'm trying to get exactly, you know, is he the leader of this resurgence, or is he the one who revitalizes the First Order? If he is, how exactly does Snoke take charge? If he, you know, what about, who is the guy who was in charge of the First Order not Snoke, but the guy that Kylo Ren was always competing with.
The redhead? I don't know off the top of my name. Or off the top of my head.
You know, what's his role? Is he going to come into play in the show? I don't think he is, because I think time-wise, I don't think he's old enough. But, you know, there's a lot of questions that I have when it comes to Moff Gideon and the First Order and how they're going to do that. And that's kind of what I'm excited about, you know, going forward for the rest of the season. Got a bit of a tangent, but that's the point I've been trying to make.
That's typical you.
Yeah, well, we both do it.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
All right, well, what do we got in store for next week, brother?
Next week, we are talking about the very anticipated Chapter 13 of The Mandalorian. Now, a couple birdies have told me that this is written and directed by Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni is the co-creator of Rebels and Clone Wars, so this is the episode we are expecting to see Ahsoka in. And given that we now know, because of the siege, Chapter 12, that there is a tracking device, and Moff Gideon is now tracking the Razor Crest, I have it in my heart, I feel there's going to be a lightsaber fight in the next episode.
Ooh, the white sabers versus the dark saber.
Well, that's the thing. I know Ahsoka had white lightsabers.
But does she still have them?
If she does at this point, I don't know. But I would love... I think what's going to happen is we're going to see Mando arrive to the planet very early. About halfway through the episode, the remnants of the Empire is going to start showing up. And it's going to be Mando, Ahsoka, and whoever Ahsoka's allies are on this planet. And Moff Gideon's going to show up, and Ahsoka and Gideon are going to have a lightsaber fight.
Now, what's the last that we saw Ahsoka Tano? Was it in her battle against Darth Vader in Rebels? Was that the last time that we know what happened to her?
No, in the last season of Rebels, Ahsoka appears in one of the last episodes. I think she is on the search to find Ezra Bridger, who was he was a Jedi apprentice to a guy who was in a Jedi who was an apprentice during Order 66 escape and has been on the run. They found each other and he ended up taking this Ezra Bridger under his wing. And I think Ahsoka was looking for him, which was right around the time A New Hope started. I think it was maybe a year or two before New Hope started.
Okay.
If that. So that's the last time I remember seeing her.
Okay. And when was this compared to her spout with Darth Vader? Because that's the last time that I recall.
We'll say 2 years before A New Hope. And then we'll say the last we saw her was a year before A New Hope.
Okay.
So
her so spout then I with just Darth never Vader saw. Okay. So then I just never saw what happened after her fight with Darth Vader. I've only seen that. But then again, that's pretty much like the only episode of Rebels I've seen. So.
But anyways, I think next episode we'll see the first live action Star Wars lightsaber fight on a TV show. That's my hopes. I feel it in my heart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've never really done live action TV shows. Is this the first live action
Star Wars live action TV show? Yeah.
All right. Well, we got something to look forward to then.
That's why, if the rumors are true and this is Dave Filoni's episode, I think it'll be a goodie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Dave Filoni's doing a fantastic job with Star Wars.
All of Star Wars.
I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you everyone for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue the discussion of The Mandalorian.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. Also, please check out our Facebook page, Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast to stay up to date with the latest announcements.
And be sure to leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing on Apple Podcast. These reviews are a big help to us. Gets better content out to you guys, and we enjoy hearing from you. So please be sure to leave us a review. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. And this is The Way.